Interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Tube Busting Episode BTWRLM 680. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Bring those miscreants with you. And donation season it is. We're still looking for donations, whether in cash or coffees. There's a KOFI website. Go ahead and drop off what you can, and we'll keep the equipment going. Still working hard. Always, it's ongoing. Always upgrading, and we are moving. Everything is going enterprise. It's just required for what's going on now. There's so much work that's coming out of the network relative to the demand upon the information that's what it's starting to take. And then we try to keep all the servers running. So if there's a breakdown, we can replace things, but not have the network come down. And so there's a redundant part of the design to the system. And it's all been quite an interesting thing to watch on as people are doing it. I'm not doing it. I make my observations, but there's certain things that have been going on. Technology has changed, and so the coding has to be done certain ways, and you learn as you go. So a lot of time being put on behind the scenes, learning how this thing works, and we're trying to keep the network going for people, and hopefully long-term, long into the future. And that's going to require a whole lot more donating, and I would like to see it. We are getting quite a few views around the platforms. I was just looking at new website. C-Rumble hasn't been kicking us off so bad anymore. So we have one account. It's been quite a few thousand views. So any of you there can make us some donations. I'd appreciate it. I know I may only come on once a couple times a day, maybe, as the rotation goes through. And again, you get to the reallibertymedia.com. That's where the buttons are. That's where all the archives can be found. That's where you can move the players through, select the host you want to hear. As I'm getting some feedback, people are using those accounts, going listening between the different hosts, just like we were when we had the network and we were live. So, or at least the one I was on, a couple I was on, and the same hosts, particularly William Roberts. So, I appreciate you tuning in there. Get the information you need. Those of you that don't have the cash but have a lot of information and it's backed up and can be shown to people, they can take in. I would hope that they can use it. Contact Minds and put yourself on the schedule and commit yourself to a time slot every week. There's plenty of room right now. So eventually maybe this thing will start kicking off. I'd be hopeful. The model seems to be more split down through all the platforms, and everybody has their little part, but it's not, to my mind, that's again, they split us down, they divide us up. That's another way to control us that way. So hopefully reallibertymedia.com will be a place that people can come back together, and we'll have all kinds of different types of content that people can pull from, and hopefully the chatting will start, the conversations will get back together like they used to, and working things through and making observations. And never know what an observation someone might have that gives you another insight and everyone had a lot of fun and moved it down the road until, again, Grimner died and we had to kind of wander a bit, wonder what we're going to do. So, again, please donate where you can. Find the donation buttons. Contact Sound Minds at one of the chats or from the website. Maybe become a member. There's sign up there, too. I think that just sends out whatever we publish off of the Ghost publisher. And so you'll get those first right off. As soon as they get published, there'll be a message for you. I think that's how that works. I'm sure Sound Minds will line me in if I'm wrong. But like I said, there's more and more is coming, hopefully, to bring up more utility for people. And then it's going to be a lot about the listener talking it up, telling what your value, what the value is for you. And hopefully people will start finding out that's what they need to do as we walk into these, I think they're perilous times. I don't see how what I'm looking at gets much better anytime soon. And it's going to, like I said last week, it takes another type of thought. If you were going to do any kind of remedies, these rights reserved to the people, it's the people, the whole entire people that have to start moving. Maybe 10% actually act, but there has to be a sentiment, a perception-managed sentiment, for as maybe bad as that sounds. It has to be in our countrymen, if you will. And if it's not, history shows us nothing happens good. It goes the way the ruling class runs it. So, again, hopefully reallibertymedia.com will be your place to get the information. You can send people to tell them to come and get some information. And it's a concentrated place to then get together and maybe start planning out what we're going to do as a people. What is going to happen? What are we going to do even by ourselves with other people in smaller, I can't use the word enclave anymore. I'm not so sure. I'm not sure, so sure we want to start using that vernacular at all. And that's what they want us to get into, using their terms. And I think the subject matter of this ongoing saga of despair proved no one is a spectator, or not enough that someone won't figure out how to threaten you into being a non-spectator. Senate panel holds Fraudchi in contempt. Ron Paul's committee refers the matter to Justice Department for possible prosecution. A Senate committee on Thursday voted along party lines to hold Dr. Anthony Fraudchi in contempt of Congress and refer him to the Justice Department for potential prosecution over his refusal to answer questions at a hearing last week focused on his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs held the vote 1 week after Fraudchi invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination more than 100 times when he appeared before the panel. Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, the committee chairman, has said that the constitutional protection did not apply since Fraudchi received a pardon from then-President Joe Biden and thus did not have to worry about the threat of prosecution. Listen very carefully of the broad statement that is, and it may not be true. And you understand, I am not anybody that supports this guy. But I am looking at a deeper problem, always, it seems. And I hope it didn't pass your listening ear when they said it was the pandemic. It was a COVID-19 pandemic. This committee starts on the wrong foot. So I'm looking, I think I smell a rat. Fraudchi and Democrats who oppose the contempt resolution say he had a well-founded fear of self-incrimination given a public desire by Republicans to seek his prosecution. So the best that Rand Paul could do is get Fraudchi for contempt and then leave the actual culprits to run free to do it again? Is that what I'm seeing? Now, this pathetic circus is designed to never get to the real culprits. And remember, Rand Paul allowed unrebutted testimony from Fraudchi that the jabs had a dual use when they did not, meaning the prohibited bioweapons enjoyed an exception, handing Fraudchi the get-out-of-jail-free card. And Rand Paul is pushing to confirm the lab leak theory from Wuhan, which is a lie. Rand Paul is not our friend here, and don't be surprised if something like this happens again. Then how hard do you think those surveillance cameras will flock you? Rand Paul knows a novel synthetic bioweapon known as SARS-CoV-2 was patented in 2003. The SARS-1 synthetic was patented in 2001. And yes, they both, by definition, originated from a lab, but not Wuhan. Much closer to home. Right, Rand? You are not your father, Paul? And I've been saying this, and far more, in regards to Rand Paul, and before him, what true accountability will take. So it is refreshing for me to finally run across someone else that at least expresses a very similar insight these many years hence. This is posted by a Tracy Smith at BROWT 1971, and Tracy says, "Remember this, if someone only talks about Anthony Fauci, but ignores everyone else involved in the experimental COVID-era response, ask yourself whether they're truly interested in accountability. In my opinion, real accountability doesn't begin and end with one person. It means examining everyone who made, approved, implemented, or enforced the policies that affected millions of lives. Selective accountability isn't real accountability. It's a narrative." Yes, indeedy. Thank you, Tracy. There may not be enough rock outcroppings in the South China Sea for everyone. Davy Jones might find himself with his hands full on this. And a government that can tell your doctor what he's allowed to say can tell your doctor to lie to you. Yesterday, a federal judge told California it can't do that anymore. 4 years, we sued, we won, free speech prevailed, was posted by Pierre Corey. And this guy was on it early on. And he happened to find my favor for sure, as I was telling you what was going on before it even got started, and saw him come up in maybe within the first year, but a few months later, doing the findings that everyone, that anybody looked at it, was finding that what we were being told was wrong. And he was a doctor that they went after, like they did a lot of doctors. And on his Substack, he posted, as of last night, the U.S. government will never get to tell doctors what they can say anymore. In Corey versus Bonta, a federal judge just barred California's attorney general and its medical boards from coming after me and my colleagues for the expert opinions we share with patients. Pierre Corey, MD, MPA. Last night, I received a call from my amazing lawyer, Rick Jaffe, who also represented Dr. Stanislaw Berzinski back in the day during the FDA's decades-long persecution of him, which I wrote about previously. Anyway, he called me with some big news. A federal judge had just signed an order that 4 years ago I thought I would never get. In the case of Corey versus Bonta, Senior United States District Judge William B. Shubb granted our renewed motion for a preliminary injunction and ordered not only the California's Attorney General, but also the Medical Board of California and the Osteopathic Medical Board, as well as anyone acting on their behalf, to stop investigating us, stop prosecuting us, and stop harassing us. Most importantly, stop threatening our license over any professional opinions we might share with our own patients about COVID-19, the, quote, vaccines, close quote, ivermectin, anything. The order names me and my two colleagues, Dr. Lin Trin Huang and Dr. Brian Tyson. And let me remind you that this fight was about, because it represents one of the most glaring absurdities perpetrated during the COVID clown show. In 2022, California passed AB 2098, a law that made it professional misconduct for a physician to give a patient COVID advice that departed from the government's position. Let me repeat that. In the supposed United States of America, parenthetically, which I started to call the United States of Harma, early on in COVID, close parentheses, American physicians in that state, where I was licensed at the time, would have been literally forced to spew state propaganda in our patient's ear, or we would have lost our licenses. Not for fraud, not for malpractice, no, it would have been for having a different medical opinion from that of our beloved, quote, beloved, close quote, quote, uncaptured, close quote, yeah, right, government health agencies led by St. Fauci, parenthetically, who, in a beautiful twist of fate, is in a contempt hearing today, close parentheses. The penalty would have been our licenses, which is to say our careers, our livelihoods, and our ability to care for people who came to us, precisely because we would have told them the truth, well, as we saw it. The state took the most personal conversation in medicine, the one between a doctor and a frightened patient, and tried to put its own words in our mouths with our licenses held as collateral to make sure we complied. We sued. And, incredibly to me at the time, we initially lost. In April 2024, this very same judge initially denied our motion based on the theory that when a doctor speaks to a patient, that speech is really just, quote, conduct, close quote, and conduct the state that is free to regulate. Yep, under that logic, the most important speech a physician ever delivers, the counsel we give at the bedside, carries less First Amendment protection than a billboard. So we said, dollar sign, percentage, number sign, exclamation point, that, and kept going. Finally, the ground shifted, and it shifted at the Supreme Court. But it wasn't easy because our appeal was denied by Justice Kagan, and then a petition for certiorari was met with 10 months of silence. This is because they were considering a similar case, that of Childs versus Salazar, which was finally decided this past March. There, the court provided what I like to call, quote, correction and direction, close quote, to Judge Shub by holding that a professional's speech to a client is still speech protected by the First Amendment and not some lesser category of, quote, conduct, close quote, that the government can freely script. That decision pulled the foundation out from under the ruling against us, so we went back to the same courtroom and asked again. This time the answer was yes. To learn of all the shenanigans pulled by the medical board and the state of California, as well as the barriers that the attorney Rick Jaffe had to overcome, please read his post about the case titled, quote, "The Doctor Will Speak to You Now," close quote. It is excellent. And I'll say get the link in the blogcaster, read the article that I'm reading, read more of it, because you might want to see rest on certain things that I'm just reading by, if you have an interest in this subject matter, or to understand what we are up against. An attorney that's been inside the trenches that has dug up a bunch of stuff on how these medical officials, these medical board officials, the state officials undermine us. It's very important. Knowing these tactics is invaluable when dealing with a corrupt system like this and in preparing for or planning your strategies or tactics. The judge was careful to point out that this was not a license for doctors to lie or to harm. The order leaves the boards every power they should have if a doctor does that. For sure, they can still go after genuine fraud and should. They can still discipline against negligent treatment, real prescribing violations, and a true failure of informed consent. What they can no longer do is punish us for telling our own patients the truth as we saw it, that in our medical judgment, the state was coercing and mandating its citizens into receiving toxic, lethal, ineffective, illogical, and experimental gene therapies, and that we would not pretend otherwise. And can I just inject for everybody here? You didn't hear that they didn't follow the law there. You didn't hear the officials failed to follow the law. And I sent some information to Corey in a time, in the day when I was sending it out. Go to the communicable disease law. Doctors were being charged on something no one had ever found. They're talking COVID, but what they were looking for, they should have been looking for, was an infectious agent. There was never non-fraudulently demonstrated. Remember that? You didn't hear that here in this list. And this is what I'm troubled with over this whole shenanigans that he's still facing. If there was nothing that the state can refer to that was non-fraudulently found, then whatever he's doing with his patients is completely private. And they don't have a right to impose an opinion. They don't even know what it is. And he's looking at the symptoms sitting before him in his office. But you didn't hear there that the law was violated. And this has been my ongoing problem. And I want you all to hear that so that you know, as you heard me talk about it, I'm one of the few people that was, if any, maybe nobody else, that explained how you would avoid, how the doctors could avoid the impositions of the state when the state could not non-fraudulently show more than a feeling, that there was any infectious agent, the infectious principle, and the PCR couldn't do it, remember. That's not how that's done. And then I showed you that if they did do it, they would be only identifying a non-natural infectious agent, which was actually just a bioweapon. And now we get to it. So I just wanted to point that out. When you're reading through this, realize there's a lot of points he's bringing. Receiving toxic, lethal, ineffective, illogical, and experimental gene therapies, but nothing that violated the law. Nothing where there was no reason, no lawful authority for the government to impose it. And because of that, he's still fighting this, because you heard it's inside the case. The case is ongoing. He's just permanently stopped. They're permanently stopped from beating on him for a while. So he continues to write, "We continue to have the freedom, even in Clownifornia, to both hold and freely express opinions that contradict those of the priesthood within the public health and academia. The court even said, in so many words, that the boards may not dress up a viewpoint prosecution as a, quote, standard of care, close quote, or, quote, informed consent, close quote, case. That was always the trick. The judge saw through it. This is a preliminary injunction, which means the full fight over the merits continues, but a preliminary injunction is not a small thing because a federal court does not issue one unless it has concluded we are likely to win, and it protects us right now, today, from the machine that spent years trying to grind down doctors who would not read from the state's script. First, they took my specialty certifications. Then they were going out to go after my license to practice. While this case was being litigated, I smartly decided to not renew my California one because of the domino effect. If you lose your license in one state, the others could and probably would follow. Rick Jaffe just told me to go ahead and reapply, but I won't, for reasons not the least of which is the $1,500 fee California charges. Know that in other states the fee is around $500. What a state. The sad reality of it all is that we had to learn that a government that can tell your doctor what he is allowed to say can basically tell your doctor to lie to you. The First Amendment exists for exactly this moment when the official position is loud, certain, and literally dead wrong. It allows for what were a few handfuls of doctors that publicly warn you. That is, if you cared to listen to what they turned us into, i.e., quote, discredited doctors, close quote. But what a day to live in, to find out our health care relies on the First Amendment and not government ethics. And he makes a good point there. If you cared to listen, anybody would have cared to tune in behind the woodshed, get you behind the woodshed, you'd have heard even to stop this with the doctors. And it didn't. And we're still seeing the repercussions. They're still into this. And no one's brought that up. He goes on to write, we were told to fall in line or lose everything. We said no, parenthetically, or in my case, the emphatic New Yorker version of no, close parentheses. And a federal judge just told the state of California that saying no was our right, parenthetically, including the New York version, although he didn't state that specifically, close parentheses. Free speech prevailed. We do not have parrot harm a government nonsense to keep our licenses. That principle was worth every day of this fight. My deepest thanks to our attorney, Rick Jaffe, who never stopped, to my co-plaintiffs, Lee Trin Young and Brian Tyson, and the Children's Health Defense, who fought for every one of us through COVID, harder still since, and for years before it ever arrived. Every one of them stood in the fire beside me, and I am dropping another donation to both Rick Jaffe and CHD right now, because who knows when you or I will need them for whatever evil comes up with next. And maybe drop over to reallibertymedia.com and find the donation buttons. I am just so sick of the persistent trampling of almost every principle of freedom we hold dear, and it helps me to sleep at night to know that we have some of the smartest, most dogged, and deeply principled people fighting for us at every turn. More soon, Pierre Corey writes. Dr. Pierre Corey. So he's in the middle of it. The Supreme Court is telling us now, our health is a First Amendment right to hear from the doctor. How do you like that? You have the right to, remember, you have the pertinent right to receive that information too. So there's actually two rights working. Very cool stuff. So congratulations to Pierre Corey. Absolutely. And being in the fight. Not congratulations of the stupid system we have working in that doesn't follow law. And then my hesitation to say, well, why don't you? And it can't be a win if you don't say that they point the finger out that no official ever did the law. And that's why we're here. And none of the courts are calling that out for sure, right? As I've talked, I've complained about this whole thing for years and years and years. How this would work out. Why I thought it was such a slam dunk and society failed ourselves. Now, on the issue of these SARS-CoV-2, we know that's a synthetic. That's lab-made, again. This one wasn't Wuhan. This was in, we heard, Chapel Hill. These were in American university labs that were being putting these things together. We heard that the military was involved after I told you months and months and months after I told you that's what was going on. And we heard Sasha Latapovo did the research upon the contracts and said, yeah, this is just a demonstration by these pharmaceutical companies. Just a demonstration, folks. This wasn't even the product line. And then you hear what they did. They had to shift over a little bit. And now they're trying to get, well, they are. They're getting that into the pharmacopoeia, I guess. But on the heels of this and ongoing against Corey, and we haven't even got at the synthetic bioweapon part of that at all in his case, they keep pushing this thing along. And now we have this coming right on the heels of that. AI invents bacterial viruses hitting a biosecurity gap. So what I'm telling you, you better start looking very carefully at what the communicable disease would have stopped for you. What I've said is still relevant. It still sits there to be protective if you know where it's at and to use it. Researchers say medical uses are possible. And what else is possible? Remember, that novel virus is not natural. It's lab-made, whether by Chapel Hill or Wuhan. Artificial intelligence has pulled off a first in virology, and it's setting off both excitement and alarm bells. Researchers at the Arc Institute in California used an AI model called Evo to design entirely new viruses, then synthesized their DNA and watched as bacteria churned them out. Does that sound any different than the mechanism attack at warp speed of the so-called COVID vaccine? Not at all. Again, it's synthesized DNA. I've done the report here recently. They moved from mRNA to the DNA. They're directly injecting that now. It's protein strings. It's chemistry. Not life. It's not natural. 16 of the AI devised genomes, and understand what they just said here, genomes. Not a bacteria, not a life, not a virus. A string of proteins. 16 of the AI devised genomes produced working viruses that infected bacteria. Now I have to wonder what a virus really is. And I've said they don't exist, so maybe we can call them anything. But 16 AI devised genomes produced working viruses that infected bacteria. Was that infected or instructed? As we now know, those of us that started looking now know what the technology is about. Infected or instructed? Some replicating even faster than their natural cousin, as well as studied bacteriophage known as a Phi-X-174. Unnatural cousins? Is that possible at all? The development could lead to medical advances. The team stressed that the creations can't infect people and that it deliberately blocked Evo from learning about human or animal infecting viruses. Until it breaks out 8 months ago and no one noticed. Remember? Right, Anthropic? We got one at the end of the broadcast. If I get there, another frontier AI. Breaks out, goes rogue. They blocked Evo, right? For how long? Still, biosecurity experts warn this kind of, quote, genomic language model, close quote, could one day be steered toward far more dangerous targets, a risk current U.S. rules barely address. Moritz Hanke, a fellow at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, who was not involved in the study, said there's a, quote, huge disconnect, close quote, between fast-moving tools and the guardrails meant to contain them. Yeah, we're finding out they don't exist. The guardrails don't exist at some point. And we find out months later, weeks later. Or, as Hanke and the other expert wrote in Science, quote, the ability to compose viral genomes using generative AI now exists. The governance to safely steer it does not, close quote. And so brave new world as we go in, we have the doctors still fighting for their freedom to be your doctor and speak freely about treating you. And yet now we have AI running their heels. And as I've said, all you go back and you look at the list that Corey mentioned, all the things that they got identified that the doctors that were good were keeping people from being harmed by that list, none of them or saying what I'm telling you right now, and will not protect you against this. They're all going to be the same list, and that lawsuit doesn't stop them. It just stops them from talking about it. And I'm trying to get people to understand you stop it up front. You don't wait till it comes around inside your society, inside your community, inside your house. You don't let authorita convince you that it's more like authority. You demand the black and white. It's really simple. It's really a simple thing. So I'm a little disappointed. I'm glad for the Corey, no doubt, but I'm a little disappointed that we didn't see law that what failed, how it failed, and got us into the bioweapon through that door that is available to everybody and all the doctors to keep the government from being able to do what it did. state of California, no state can impose upon their doctors a fraud. And every doctor had the right to prescribe as they saw their patient in the moment. Again, there was no test. The PCR was not a test. What it did do is it did find synthetics, didn't it? So that's another proof. So we're back to the bioweapon really quick, aren't we? Not natural, not a vaccine, can't be a vaccine. By definition, real simple answer here, was not part of that lawsuit that Corey is still under. In this article, interesting discussion coming here. This is a couple of different tacks going on with it. Affordable health care is not going to happen. Okay, so we're on the tack that we see AI going to build these viruses. They don't affect people until they do. They don't break out until they do. They don't go rogue until they do. And that's supposedly the white hat doctors and researchers that are handling it until they're not. And then this article comes right up within the next week. Affordable health care is not going to happen. What the WHO report says, if you read it carefully. Well, who's the WHO? No, not the rock group, the owl, or the little people from Whoville, the World Health Organization. Who are they? But the global brokers of harm. The 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, approved by the UN General Assembly in 2015, includes 17 goals, 17 global goals, parenthetically, Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, close parentheses. So let's watch this. This is an underlying theme, and understand this is coming through Russia RT, and they have a little program that they're running on how to better assess the health and wealth and general well-being of the people of the nations of the world. So he's talking through this. One of them is the, quote, universal health coverage, close quote. That is the idea. That's right, the idea. No substance for it, just a notion. However valid, one of 17, don't you know? And we in America got Obamacare, corporate or equity monopolization care. Remember? I read that. From the WHO recently also, the patient is on the corporate feeding or nourishing list. That is, the idea that all people will be able to obtain the medical services they need without facing financial hardship that ruins them. The goal, first telegraphed when states aggressively began to attach property of an estate of the people needing care with the establishment of Medicaid in 1965, adjusted under Clinton in 1993, the progressivism plunder was on then exploiting a natural weakness about people. People get old, they get sick, and they die. How attaching a patent land that the government grantor disposed to the heirs and assigns forever isn't a grant breach, destroying the republic, is beyond me to understand. Well, except that that's how unchecked progressivism plunder rolls. And interestingly, coincident with the initial popularism of technocracy way back, way, way back to the 1930s. Not to be confused with the Wayback Machine of Archive.org, and thanks Archive.org for hosting past episodes of Behind the Woodshed that excited, generously spent his time and effort posting for everyone to access. And I think we actually got hooked up through the network to get to them as well. How things are progressing. Remember, progressivism. How things are progressing in that direction can be judged from the data presented in the World Health Organization publication Tracking Universal Health Coverage 2025 Global Monitoring Report. So monitoring is the M in smart, S-M-A-R-T. Not too intelligent, but S-M-A-R-T. The WHO, the WHO, formulated and tracks two fairly complex indicators, each made up of smaller ones. The first, the Health Service Coverage Index, or SCI, aggregates data across four areas and aspects of health care: maternal and child health, infectious diseases, non-communicable diseases, and the volume and accessibility of medical services. So maybe the great Kobe Swindle skewed those numbers too? And as we saw, the terms get skewed there as well to keep up the cat box cover-up. The second, the Financial Hardship Index, or FHI, shows the share of the population whose out-of-pocket household spending on healthcare, parenthetically excluding insurance-based and state-funded medicine, quote parentheses, exceeds 40% of their household budget. The WHO report reveals an irony of, quote, sustainable development, close quote. If in 2000 to 2015 there was a global progress on both indicators, then in the, quote, era of the SDGs, close quote, as the report calls it, that is after 2015, there is a stagnation and in some places even deterioration. So without knowing it, was an era, not even a nicked era then. We was on it behind the woodshed, even before that. And indeed, the era, so-called, hasn't ended. And how could it? Being planned to 2100 and beyond. They're sneaking up on you, Buzz Lightyear. From 2015 to 2023, progress on both indicators was recorded in fewer than 4 out of every 10 countries, or 38%. In the overwhelming majority of countries, either there is no growth in access to medical services or there is no reduction in the unaffordable costs of those services for very many people. And in 8% of countries, both indicators show negative dynamics. It must also be borne in mind that the decline in the financial hardship index shown in the report was obtained through a revision of the methodology used to calculate it. So figures lie, and liars figure, moving the goalposts, as they do. By contrast, the previous global UHC monitoring report in 2023 recorded a steady increase in the frequency of catastrophic healthcare spending by patients not covered by insurance. At that time, quote, catastrophic, close quote, referred to the spending exceeding 25% of a household budget. I'll say, behind woodshed, just the appointment fee is a catastrophic spending if I could get the ability to leave for care if I needed it. The WHO report, as of 2023, 4.6 billion, bravo people, worldwide, that is, the absolute majority, 57% of humanity, did not have access to essential health services. At the same time, 2.1 billion, bravo people, experienced financial hardship because of healthcare costs. Through revised indicators and slippery wording, the WHO is trying to demonstrate progress toward universal healthcare access. So yeah, the slippery wording. Maybe we can keep track of those slick willy words. We were doing that during the great Kobe swindle. It should be understood that national statistical agencies whose data the WHO collects are trying to solve the same task. Do they even know what the purpose of the WHO was with the, if the great Kobe swindle wasn't a clue? How about this author? Is he also clueless? Or is he in the know and given the assignment to break it gently to y'all? Yet despite the positive colors in which the charts are painted, negative trends are clearly visible. In Asia, the growth in the volume of medical services is purely nominal, while in Europe and the Americas, where the greatest volume of medical services have been achieved, the last 10 years have seen a decline. We have already noted the statistical game used to show a reduction in the financial hardship patients face when paying for healthcare, but the manipulation of indicators was enough only to turn a negative trend into the absence of positive movement, that is, into, quote, stability, close quote, in the terminology of the report's authors. It is precisely such stability that is recorded in Europe, the Americas, and Eastern Mediterranean. In Southeast Asia, which aspires to become the new core of the world system of global capitalism, there is not even such stability. There even, after all the calculations, a clear increase is visible in the financial hardship patients face when buying and paying for medical services. But there is no global capitalism in a global debt-based fiat financial system. People making believe fraud or debt instruments constitute capital is insanity. On the other hand, there is a tangible capital being exploited, the human capital. Feeding parasitic humanists, we call them today. As a result, although the report's authors do not say so directly, quote, universal health coverage, close quote, by 2030 looks completely unrealistic. It's only unrealistic if we think health means people being healthy. How is that to happen? Upon which premise was health considered in a system whose basis is treating symptoms for best profit and attacking doctors treating and often curing, egads, curing the causal agent or condition? Just as we all witnessed in that great Kobe swindle, the repercussions still reverberating through till now, right, Dr. Pierre Corey? The WHO, the global harma swindler, murdering people. Yes, a large enough number of rock outcroppings in the South China Sea indeed. A far more realistic scenario is, on the contrary, a decline in the accessibility of medical services. Is anyone in America happy with the medical system in America after Obamacare, now Trumpscare, and the ridiculous costs and mistreatments relative to insurance? I hope some of you have seen these stories. I hope all of you see the stories. I can't believe the costs and the lack of service and the fraud and the harm that comes on people, the worry, the fret. Again, the costs are astronomical since then. And I've read or heard nothing but complaints top to bottom that didn't exist 15 years ago lately. Not even from the doctors complaining insurance underwriters are dictating to them what constituted needed care. Now, maybe that California Dr. Corey injunction against the state and agents might help to inform that matter. What do you think? Think about that. Just come to mind. Maybe the First Amendment right to speak carries the other right to exercise here. There is one more important point. Earlier, we examined the UN's World Cities Report 2026 devoted to the global housing affordability crisis. Well, that was one of the modernization acts enacted in the U.S. around 2010 or so, in housing modernization and affordability. And as well, the UNESCO's Global Education Monitoring Report 2026 devoted to trends in children's education. And that modernization act, too. Always making advantage to the state at the expense of the people, while stealthily harmonizing with the global sustainable development goals toward the future that they want without you. Remember, population control. Everywhere we observe a similar picture, a shift in the global trend from positive to negative in roughly 2015. That is, just after the UN General Assembly approved the updated Sustainability Development Agenda. See? I told you. This is, I said, behind the woodshed over a decade and a half ago. So what exactly happened to humanity in its sustainable development in 2015? Well, maybe what was planned for those monsters without inherible blood? That is a question we still have to answer, or read really, really closely in context of the purpose of sustainable development goals, and there is no question at all. And that they have us just where they want us, give or take. The agenda continues apace, and the people in the world pay dearly for that transformative modernization towards austerity and to perception managed technocratic population control. Right? Trump's Gaza Bordeaux piece? In the meantime, we suggest reflecting on what social well-being consists of and what conditions are necessary to achieve it. Yeah, keep contemplating our navel as the humanist parasites feed off of us. There is no need for more reflection. This is a plan being incrementally executed. And if we look at the author, we'll see he's part of a project that's advancing this. Now, as I stated back in 2010 or so, roughly, with all the modernization acts, then nothing those acts touch, and all consistent with sustainable development goals, has brought any good of what they were promoted to bring. What happened in 2015 was the beginning implementations of all that legislation around the world that was made prior to 2010, being so much more fully engaged since then that today we hear the progress report of the relative success of those encroachments, using statistics to hide the fact, but provide the numbers for a plausible analysis. So this article can lament about it, keeping the global karma broker relevant, but promoting itself, the RT Social Wellbeing Index Project, which Russia's offering for a more proper imposition of sustainable development, because the current fertility rate of depopulation is 2.1, is an existential threat. and they're offering something that gets them to reanalyze the data so we can move it up to 3, and then they're not such a threat to them. The sustainable development is not a threat to them. So once anyone stops believing the lie and looks very, very much closer and understand it isn't irony, but their own stupidness they are witnessing, all prior warm and fuzzy expectations cease. At that point, you must choose to be owned, like human livestock, under technocratic rule, or get you behind the woodshed and bring those miscreants with you. And proving once again, this place isn't a spectator sport, that you have to be vigilant against encroachments, having the duty to oust usurpations, whatever form they take, even seemingly legitimate ones, and the declaration required to be made in exercising the universal right of man to alter or abolish miscreant, even tyrannical government threatening the well-being of the populace. A model of action to example to us, everyone here listening, and who will listen, who might choose to listen today. I'm amazed at how these reports come up, all in time, all in order. Hezbollah threatens to take action against supporters of dialogue with Israel. So as I shifted, and people don't know this, but I'm moving along in my mind, what do I want to talk about? I tell you I'm having trouble finding stuff to talk about, and so far I've been blessed to be able to come on with some stuff since the last few months. Really kind of not knowing what to tell people, but each week I come up with an idea. All of a sudden it came to me, I better start moving into what that right of altar abolish is about. What's that thing about? What are we doing here? And we find out it's a spectrum. And I did a shift. And normally I don't do a kind of a shift. That's why you don't know that. It's in my mind. I did a shift to do a more detailed review of that for you, even offering the questions I had asked of an AI assistant, just so I'm getting a groundwork going. And a shift happens in those weeks. I make that shift, and then all of a sudden the news comes to help me. And here we have it again, giving us the example. Hezbollah threatens to take action against supporters of dialogue with Israel. What does that have to do with the right of altar abolish? Well, we got to look at the problem. Look at their situation over there. This is perfect. The leader of the Shiite resistance called on Lebanon's political leadership to stop making uncompensated concessions in negotiations with Israel to begin dialogue with the movement to work toward restoring internal unity and to prioritize national sovereignty. Those of you that listened last week, you see I use those same terms in the definition and response. Isn't that cool? I get kind of excited. So it's out here for us. If we would just understand that, we aren't done. People have the power. So what did you hear there in that last little paragraph? It's pretty fascinating. Didn't you hear I discussed last week that they are declaring a separation by revolution? What is the purpose they have declared? Did you hear what I said last week? Or did you hear what you saw? Something new popped up, and it's in the same right. Did they declare outright overthrow of the ruler as the founding fathers insisted, or something else? What did they say? Very important. Also, in line with the required elements mentioned at the end of last episode, that would be, for those of you that don't know, the week it is, BTW RLM 679. Hezbollah said the purpose of the resistance is to work toward restoring internal unity and to prioritize national sovereignty. Hezbollah intends to restore the government, not overthrow the established government, but restore the established government that's usurped by the current regime, working with foreign governments to oppress and divide the people of Lebanon, the actual national sovereignty. The people of Lebanon, not the government actors threatening dialogue with an invading, illegal, belligerent, genocidal occupier that doesn't have the right to dialogue if the Lebanese integrity is being honored. In other words, being an existential threat, you never negotiate with a terrorist, which is the very thing the U.S. government calls any American that doesn't agree with it or its actions. What did you hear about Corey? They jumped all over him. Didn't want to read the state's script. But let's not look past the point here. The dirty, stupid brown people over there exercise the right to alter or abolish better than we, the people here, having the express constitutional right to do so. Hezbollah is saying, we object to the current governance, and the intent is to have the current government restore the organic establishment, restore internal unity, and prioritize the national sovereignty, the people of Lebanon. What an indictment of that government, right? And they mean then that if the current complicit Lebanese governance regime doesn't restore internal unity and prioritize the national sovereignty, the very integrity of the people a righteous government is to serve, then Hezbollah will resist that usurpacious regime and the foreign belligerent genocidal terrorist invader militarily. I think they make the American founding fathers proud. And keeping their international perceived ducks in a row, if you're listening very carefully there. Not to be confused with duck, duck, go. Ducks in a row. With the destruction of the unity of the national sovereignty at home, where are we the people that Hezbollah just showed us how? And they are somehow the dirty, brown, stupid, sandal-wearing terrorists? Really? Oh, and that's a STOOPID for the hearing sensitive. Qassem emphasize that the movement supports the deployment of the Lebanese army south of Litani River, accompanied by the complete withdrawal of Israeli forces from Lebanese territory, acknowledging more military integration with the Lebanon government, not its overthrow, not abolishment by revolution when the government begins to restore the integrity of the national sovereignty. This is pretty cool. Watching the right to alter or abolish an action in the world, challenging the unrighteous of the world. The leader of the Shiite resistance stressed that stability throughout Lebanon is impossible as long as the southern regions of the country continue to be subjected to attacks and destruction. And that includes a total destruction of the ancient Christian villages by the Zionist political movement terrorism. If and you think dirty brown Muslim people only think of Islam. The Muslims are more considerate of Christianity than Trump is. A new round of Lebanese-Israeli talks is scheduled to take place in Rome on August 4 to 6. That's an existential threat to Lebanon, and it's just talk, talk, talk. Lebanese President Joseph Aoun has repeatedly stated that negotiations with Tel Aviv are the only way to end the conflict. However, he said that Beirut does not intend to make concessions that would undermine its sovereignty and territorial integrity and considers the full withdrawal of Israeli forces a priority. Just a priority, not an existential national security threat of the highest, not prioritizable order for immediate military action and defense, not subject to negotiation. Talk, 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 instead of full-on defense? Anyway, Hezbollah seems to be complying with the prerequisites of universal right to alter or abolish, as opposed to, let us say, and with the same and much greater grievances, Americans doing nothing much against foes foreign and domestic, as the Lebanese people are doing for themselves through Hezbollah. Nowhere, but we talk, 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 pretending concessions to the American establishment and national sovereignty, we the people, haven't already been made. I thank Hezbollah for its reminder and of what it takes to be an American, the vigilant non-spectator, confounding usurpation in every form, especially for one perceived as a legitimate government, but gone bad. In this case, we don't need revolution where restoration would work better, right? And it also gives the usurper or derelict governance regime one last opportunity to restore, to avoid the last resort for the grievances which impel our separation for the protection of the people, their enumerated and unenumerated rights, unalienable, which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, and as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. From the prior deist philosophy founding declaration document. It's exciting to see this week, a week after initiating a discussion of the right to alter or abolish the question and article, when and why resistance against the state is justified, to see a working example in the world the very next week, and rather not so exciting, even to the shame of those Americans extolling the virtue while sitting on their hands while doing so, where I advocated for people to demand restoration of the established order in light of the oppressive usurpation's great Covey swindle attack at warp speed, by resorting to due process protections in local communicable disease law, and not many undertook that duty and obligation to protect themselves or the populace at large, nor did they aggressively protect the existence of this broadcast on social platforms by reposting it for others to hear to protect themselves. And thank you to the few of you that did. It turns out you did a great work to help those that heard and avoid the herd injection of the bioweapons. And I have no tangible evidence as yet we the people generally mutually are sufficiently and adequately informed that we the people are capable of matching the duties and obligations to themselves as is being done right now by those oft-derided dirty sandal-wearing Muslim terrorists. So stop calling them dirty sandal-wearing Muslim terrorists, because they aren't. They are an example of what a free sovereign people do in the face of overwhelming tyranny from within or invasion from without. So get to work pulling the log out of thine own eye. When a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. So get you behind the woodshed now and bring those miscreants, oppressive usurpers with you. Demand they restore your life, liberty, property, or happiness, or else. Right, Hezbollah? As we read, Christians are under siege in Jerusalem. Nuns, priests, and worshippers describing rising abuse, stone throwing, and fear in the holy city as anti-Christian incidences surge. Quote, their very first night, we were so scared, we were paralyzed with fear. I can honestly say that for the first time, I was afraid to go out alone the next morning. I mean, we were never afraid before, never. Close quote. The testimony of Sister Elizaveta from the Russian Ecclesiastical Mission in Jerusalem. In an exclusive interview with RT, she outlines the abuse and attacks nuns from the mission are being subjected to in the Holy City. At the end of July, Sister Elizaveta and three other nuns from the mission were walking back from a night vigil when they realized something wasn't quite right. Quote, we finished the night service at the tomb of the Lord. We exited through the new gate. That's where we came across some policemen. We smiled at them. They smiled right back at us, close quote, Sister Elizaveta said, adding, quote, and literally after 200 meters on the crossroads near Notre Dame, we started hearing crude screaming and swearing in Hebrew, close quote. The nuns attempted to ignore the aggressive taunts and continued walking. However, they were stopped from crossing the road by a red signal traffic light and the group closed in. Sister Elizaveta says that they began hurling stones at the sisters. Quote, the stones started flying, close quote, she said. I noted that they were thrown very hard. That is, it's not just a throw to scare a person, it's such a blow to defeat, close quote. Sister Elizaveta said some of the stones struck them, including one which hit her fellow sister Antonia in the chest. She's grateful the attack didn't result in any serious injuries. Quote, thank God that the attack wasn't fatal, close quote. Attacks like this are becoming more and more commonplace in Israel, with the holy city in Jerusalem seemingly a pinch point. A new report from a Jewish organization, the Religious Freedom Data Center, RFDC, shows incidents against Christians have nearly doubled in the past 3 months. There were 83 reported anti-Christian incidents in the second quarter of 2026, up from 44 in the first quarter just of this year. The organization's founder and director is Yiska Harani. She's concerned about the ever-growing creep of anti-Christian incidences in Israel and says what's being reported is likely only the tip of the iceberg. Quote, everything now is very tense and very oriented toward Jewish, unfortunately I must say this, supremacy, Yiska says. Quote, there's a feeling, especially in the last 3 years since the Hamas attack of Israel, there's a lot of nervousness that has turned people's minds to black and white thinking. It's either the Jewish, Israeli, or enemies, the rest of the world, close quote. Yiska, who herself is a practicing Jew, believes much of the issue stems from the lack of education as to who Christians are and what they believe. Quote, there is no education about Christianity. Christianity is only learned through the traumas and the realistic traumas of Jewish people, close quote, she explained. Quote, with that knowledge, once a person sees a cross and in the atmosphere of black and white, everybody wants to annihilate us. Then all of a sudden, the one thing that rises to the mind is this person. Next thing, if he could choose, he would do a pogrom. He would join the Nazis, close quote. Yiska points out that there are Christian Israeli citizens who serve in the IDF and the Israeli police force who contribute to the safety and security of Israel. Yet, despite their contribution, she believes the current Israeli government is pushing the country towards becoming a more Jewish religious state. Quote, to add to it, the government, who is really pushing towards a very halakhic religious state, and in the last years, this dream about temple, and therefore, if there is a temple, then this country should be perhaps cleansed from anyone who is not, you know, a temple worshiper, close quote, she said. Quote, at least half of this country was taken captive and hostages by this mindset, close quote. Half of the population being captive is the most democratic place in the Middle East by the most moral ally, isn't it? Yeah, right. This is BTWRLM 680. The RFDC has hundreds of volunteers who are documenting incidents across Israel, though the focus is on the Holy City. These volunteers, who are mainly Jewish, are often equipped with body cameras to account and document any aggression. But even with this such evidence, Yiska claims the authorities are often ignoring the problem and many of the crimes being committed go unpunished. Quote, the police closing the files that I submit, it means not that the police couldn't catch them. They were not interested enough in catching them, but they were not interested because the authorities above told the police, don't bother about it, she said. Yiska is also clear that these issues are being caused by a small, though growing, extreme section of Israeli society. Quote, I can testify that there are hundreds and thousands of people who go not spitting, not saying bad words, close quote. In April, a particularly brutal attack on a nun in a holy city was captured on CCTV. In the video, a man wearing a Jewish kippah and tzitzit ritual tassel violently attacks her from behind. He initially walks away, but then returns to kick her while she is on the ground, defenseless. That attack sparked international outcry. It even warranted a response from senior Israeli politicians who condemned the attack. The suspect was later arrested. This week alone, more video evidence has ever emerged that Jewish youth spitting and throwing stones toward the entrance of the St. James Monastery in the Armenian quarter of the Holy City. The Israeli police say six individuals, five minors and one adult, have been detained as a result of inquiries. Other incidents are more difficult to tag as being specifically anti-Christian, though they are clearly perpetrated against individuals who are seen as non-Jewish. Father Mark Carey, who is also from the Russian Ecclesiastical Mission in Jerusalem, told RT he was in a car when the road in front of them was set alight. Quote, we drove through Mea Sharem, and just while we were standing on the traffic light, they were trying to pour some kind of burning liquid on the road in front of us, which was then set on fire, Father Markari said. This incident took place on Shabbat, the Jewish Sabbath, in a more observant area of Jerusalem. While the vehicle Father Markari was in had diplomatic plates, there was no religious symbols on it. Father Markari explains attacks are frequent, but this was a new low. Quote, usually there are bottles flying into the cars, stones, but never before has something been set on fire next to a gas station. This is something new, close quote. Sister Eliza Veda also believes education is necessary to stop the spread of hate. She also, so here, who hates who, right? You want to blame people that want to talk the truth, they're haters. But here the people that are haters are actually identified as haters. They don't suffer the same inquisition. She says she has encountered several instances where young Jewish children smile at her and their families intervene. Quote, there were several cases where parents teach their kids how to hate Christians. Last time I met such a family, the dad was walking with the kids and the children were smiling at me because I smile at them, close quote. She says the children's father then explained to the children that they shouldn't smile at her. Quote, their facial expression is that at first they are just confused, then they are scared, and then they are finally angry with you. And this change of face is terrible, it seems to me, because this child will already live with the attitude that Christians should be treated like this, quote, quote, she said sadly, that the cancer known as the Israeli society, not merely its leadership. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has often claimed his country is a safe place for Christians to practice their religion, but the figures tell a different story. Christians have told RT that they feel that they are being pushed out of their land. Some fear to walk the streets of Holy City in Jerusalem with any visible symbols of their Christianity. While more and more incidents, including spitting and verbal abuse, are now being recorded, many victims are still too scared to come forward. And in another article, it's reported that church leaders have said that complaints frequently produce little action and warned that continued violence, settlement expansion, and political hostility are driving some of the Holy Land's oldest Christian communities to leave. Occurring under the chosen boot of the most moral democratic genocidal apartheid regime in Middle East. Who needs Christ, right? In fact, let's yoke with evil. And on the shore, this most moral democratic genocidal apartheid regime, integrating it with the United States military. So Americans, too, can enjoy the, quote, safe space, close quote, for coordinated attacks of fear, intimidation, and dread, also known as terrorism, right here at home. The ship of state, the United Synagogue of Satan, the USS Concentrated Evil, is about to set sail. As we read this week as well, on this continuing topic of blaming the wrong people. Water system hacking spreads with Iran as top suspect. At least 7 states have been hit. Now, Netanyahu must have contributed to that headline. My top suspect would be CIA Mossad. How about you? A hacking campaign that began in Minnesota's water system is now known to stretch across at least 7 states, with federal officials increasingly pointing to Iran as the likely source. They point to the caves in Afghanistan, too, didn't they? But likely how? As we heard in the last episode, Hugging Face said they had narrowed the unprecedented hack down to a frontier AI model. Hugging Face says it was driven end-to-end by an autonomous AI agent, and we detected and dissected it largely with AI of our own. So what's the evidence for a likely Iran and not CIA Mossad? Anyone else? Or an undiscovered frontier AI infiltration agent? Intrusions have hit internet-connected control systems that regulate treatment chemicals and water pressure in some cases. Utilities were pushed into manual operations and issued boiling notices. It sounds like the 2009s or 2010 news, doesn't it? Happening to you again today while the government watches. Authorities said that there is no evidence that drinking water has been contaminated, but warns the scope could be wider as more systems check their networks. The FBI and EPA said some attacks have disrupted operations with Michigan, has confirmed 9 municipal systems experienced suspicious activity, but remain safe. But Stuxnet. Cybersecurity experts describe the incident as a notable escalation by Iran-line hackers, who have been more active since the war with the U.S. began 5 months ago. So your activity is enough. Not the actual doing, just the thought of an activity. President Trump has publicly dismissed the likelihood of Iranian involvement, instead suggesting Minnesota was to blame, an assertion that Governor Tim Walz rejected. Behind the scenes, federal officials and industry memos are treating Tehran as the leading suspect, while small cities grapple with how to pay for security upgrades for aging infrastructure. What does Trump know that the federal officials don't, that he feels Iran isn't a threat, so he can grind his political axe on Minnesota and not give up Mossad? More than 30 community water systems are affected in Minnesota. Digital warfare has become ingrained in military conflict, and local water plants or healthcare facilities often lack the money and know-how to install the latest software patches or take other security steps, what has made them a favorite target partly because of the panic such disruptions can cause. So much for the United States government assurances more than a decade ago that Cyber Command would be ready to defend against cyber warfare, that U.S. CyberCom plans, coordinates, integrates, synchronizes, and conducts activities to direct the operations and defense of specified Department of Defense information networks and prepare to, and when directed, conduct full-spectrum military cyberspace operation in order to enable actions in all domains, ensure U.S. ally to freedom of action in cyberspace and deny the same to our adversaries, and promote it's a military command that operates globally in real time against determined and capable adversaries. Sounds like Trump's military failed again. Well, unless by, quote, conduct full-spectrum military cyberspace operations means they done it. Like the military done it at warp speed for the great Kobe swindle. And Iran's response to all that, they don't care. As I've said, enough's enough. Enough with the theater diplomacy, Iran's top negotiator tells Trump. The United States president will gain nothing from bullying, broken promises, and fake news, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf has said. U.S. President Donald Trump should curb his, quote, theater diplomacy, close quote, as it will not work with Iran, Tehran's top negotiator Ghalibaf said. Trump announced on Saturday that he had called off a planned attack on Iran, which, according to him, would have been on a scale not seen since World War II, he claimed. That he made the decision because Washington and Tehran were close to reaching a diplomatic solution to the conflict in the Middle East. In the following days, the United States president insisted that the two sides were, quote, having very good discussions, close quote, but warned that Iran would be, quote, hit very hard, close quote, if the Strait of Hormuz, through which around one-fifth of the world's seaborne oil passes, was not reopened, quote, very soon, close quote. Tehran has repeatedly denied holding any direct negotiations with Americans. And I just want to remind us, they were in the same room and would not talk to the Americans when they went to Islamabad. Remember that, how certain they are about what they're doing. Ghalibaf took to X on Thursday to berate Trump's approach to dealing with Tehran. Quote, massive attack coming. Wait, never mind. They want to negotiate. That's the theater diplomacy on loop, close quote. He wrote. The negotiator insisted that, quote, using bullying plus broken promises plus fake news as leverage is a failed strategy, close quote. Ghalibaf advised Trump to instead, quote, acknowledge the facts and fulfill your commitments. We don't need Mo theater, close quote. Okay, it wasn't Mo, Moore. On Thursday, Iranian ministry spokesperson Ismail Baghaei told the reporters that negotiations with Oman on resuming commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz were nearing completion. The two countries with access to the waterway have agreed on the routes and are in the final stage of drafting a joint statement providing, quote, certain third parties do not obstruct the process, close quote, a guy said in an apparent reference to Washington. Tehran stressed earlier that a deal between Tehran and Muscat would, quote, not mean the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, close quote, with the resumption of traffic depending on the U.S. fulfilling its commitments under the MOU. So that's the art of the deal, and likely reason behind the latest Trump Taco Tuesday not bombing Iran there, because negotiations are going well. Well, not really, given Trump's political kabuki theater and WWF World Get Smacked Down skit in the P.T. Barnum Trump Greatest Clown Show on Earth, literally across the entire world. Scary clowns. Iran is now openly identifying that, as we have behind the woodshed the entire time. Iran telling Trump to fold up his tent and get out of town is truly a disgrace for America. If he were a contestant on his own show, The Apprentice, he would have heard, you're fired, by now. What's the book on Trump losing midterm Republican support to the Democratic Party hornet's nest watching the greatest clown show on earth tent go up in flames, claiming a health issue, extracting a pardon for Trump and his family, and handing the keys to the kingdom to VP Vance, and taking his ill-gotten gains home with him. What are the running odds on that? And sticking with Iran for a moment and the prior regime, Hunter Biden wins a defamation suit over Iran bribery claims. The son of the previous U.S. president was awarded $1.7 million in damages in his dispute with Trump ally Patrick Byrne. A U.S. federal judge on Friday awarded Hunter Biden $1.7 million in damage in a defamation suit against Patrick Byrne, former Overstock.com CEO and outspoken backer of U.S. President Donald Trump. The lawsuit has been dragging on since 2023, when Biden brought Byrne to court over repeated claims that he sought an $800 million bribe from Iran during his father's presidency. Byrne alleged that in exchange for the massive payout, Biden promised to get some $8 billion Bravo dollars in Iranian funds unfrozen and to ensure a softer stance in nuclear talks with Tehran. While Byrne has insisted he believed the allegations to be genuine, he failed to provide to this court throughout the course of litigation any documentary evidence that could allow a reasonable person to believe the story to be true, close quote, the judge said in the ruling. So here's an object lesson, really more what I'm reading these reports, regarding what was required and the lack of response to remind us to use the black and white and possess evidence, not unsubstantiated opinion, when we're approaching these things. On the other hand, ruling on a lack of presentation of evidence does not mean that the statements were not true, so the court answers to that as well. Moreover, the court found, quote, ample evidence, close quote, indicating that the defendant knew the claims were false, but spread them nonetheless. The claims disseminated by the defendant, quote, went far beyond mere negligence, close quote, and the former CEO acted with, quote, intentional misrepresentation, close quote, and a, quote, conscious disregard, close quote, continuing to spread the claims even after he was sued by Hunter and encouraging social media users to propagate them further. Quote, the evidence is clear and convincing that Byrne has engaged in intentional misrepresentation with conscious disregard towards Biden's rights, quote, quote, the judge wrote in the ruling, which awarded Hunter's $1.7 million in punitive damages. So there are the elements to maintain that sort of judgment, if anyone is interested. The legal team for the ex-president's son hailed the ruling as a, quote, complete vindication, close quote, for their client against the, quote, false statements, close quote, made by Byrne. Quote, as found by the court, Byrne had no basis to say that Hunter had any involvement with Iran whatsoever, close quote, Hunter's attorney Brian Sullivan said in a statement. So why would Byrne politically not want to provide evidence? Was it lack of confidence in the judiciary or of a fair trial or a uniparty setup? Maybe a bigger fish will fry up Byrne's food chain? And so what is the truth, really? Over the past years, Biden has been embroiled in assorted legal troubles and claims to have racked up a massive debt, primarily stemming from court fees, even despite his father granting him a pardon for convictions on federal gun and tax charges in the last days of his presidency. Well, this is reminiscent of why Brodsky asserted the Fifth Amendment protections, isn't it? Byrne is no stranger to controversy either, being one of the central figures of the scandal involving Russian gun activist Maria Butina, with whom he admitted to having an intimate relationship. Butina was ultimately convicted of, quote, conspiring to act as an unregistered foreign agent and expelled to Russia after serving a prison term. Oh, good. Nailing an unregistered foreign agent. Now do AIPAC and the rest of them. The affair prompted Byrne to step down from his executive role in 2019, with the businessman focusing primarily on political activism ever since. He has strongly supported U.S. President Trump, including by backing the allegations that the latter was cheated out of the 2020 election win, as well as bankrolling legal efforts to challenge the outcome. He's a bankroller, probably so tied together. And speaking of bankrolling, Tara Reid moved to Russia, couldn't handle what happened to her through Biden and the threats that were happening to her from the U.S. government, or potentially so, as she felt. The U.S. is handing its war machine to Israel. Why do we talk even here from the other article? Because they're trying to point Iran, the bad guy. Not going on, is it? Not going on. No proof whatsoever. A new Pentagon IDF tie-up deepens military integration while ordinary U.S. citizens get more war, more debt, and less to hope for at home. In the early 2000s, I worked, she writes, Tara Reid writes, I worked with domestic violence victims in Seattle, Washington. One of my trainers was a scrappy woman who told me she was a former member of the Israeli Defense Forces, IDF. Are they everywhere, folks? Looking back, I remember wondering why several former Mossad and IDF personnel were involved in training Seattle police officers. At the time, I didn't think much of it. After all, they were working to help protect victims of domestic violence. Fast forward to 2026. Buried inside the massive National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, for fiscal year 2027, is Section 219, a provision that creates what is officially called the United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative. In practical terms, it directs the Pentagon to deepen the integration of U.S. and Israeli military research, defense technology development, weapons manufacturing, and military industrial supply chain under a single coordinating framework. Now, let us look at that word salad, coordinating or coordination. Now, I've talked about this relationship in the past, very instructive today. The relationship is not one of cooperation, where the cooperating party offers suggestions to the lead agency, which that agency unilaterally makes the final determination, which can completely disregard any subordinate proposal. This relationship is one of coordination, having equal contribution, force, and effect, equal standing. It's what the Jefferson Mining District, a congressionally recognized miners' government, used to give miners the equal power in coordinating the proposed actions of an agency, and that they met the law that was needed to protect the miners. That an individual, or in the case of an individual miner, that can't do on their own. If they don't know to invoke that an uncommon mineral claim is an unassociated mining district in its own right. Now, I did that for our mining claim before associating with Jefferson Mining District when it was established. This term coordinating defines that relationship that should not be extended to the military of a foreign power of any nature, such as Israel, illegally and belligerently terroristic. The decisions of any proposal made in a coordinated manner must meet and satisfy all the lawful needs of the parties. Those needs cannot be disregarded without extensive valid reasoning of record. But where the Zionist political movement recognizes no law, what is the coordinating limit for its demands? And in this regard, tossing into the word salad, the term integration defines the flavor of the relationship as one in which the Zionist political movement, which honors no law, can direct what the U.S. military does to meet its terroristic organization's national security aspirations for global domination by the self-declared chosen. The article goes on to say, critics argue that this represents an unprecedented level of institutional integration between the United States and a foreign military partner. So there's unprecedented again. How many episodes in a row have we heard unprecedented things occurring in the world today? Never ever seen anything like it ever before. It's quite an historical witness. Tara Reid says, I recently sat down with Tucker Carlson on my podcast, East Meets West. And one of the questions I asked him was about this new level of military integration between U.S. and Israel. And Tucker called it treason. Yes, treason. Not the recently offered Trojan horse, as I've been hearing it described, Trump is. There's a long record of the United States and its people, 350 million people, being misused by Israeli intelligence. And so the idea that you would merge them formally is a generational disaster. It's the definition of treason. This is treason. Many people agreed with that assessment, and so do I. Never before in the U.S. history has a foreign nation been granted this degree of institutional integration into American military's research and defense industrial base. This goes well beyond the political influence of organizations like AIPAC or campaign spending in Washington. It reaches into the military-industrial infrastructure itself. It means shared research, shared development, shared procurement, and an even deeper intelligence relationship. You notice there was no shared prosperity like sustainable development to put on y'all. No, that's not there. Once these systems are intertwined, they are extraordinarily difficult to separate. And that's a big key right there. Another big problem. Meanwhile, ordinary U.S. citizens are dealing with inflation, shrinking resources, crumbling infrastructure, and the continued erosion of the American dream, called austerity, right? You're sharing prosperity, right there, while the Trump family and other insiders profit in the billions. The promise of ending the endless wars now rings hollow. Trump, the Trojan horse who convinced so many people he was different, has made even Biden's hawkish foreign policy team look restrained by comparison. Trump reportedly accepted roughly $300 million in support from Mary Madison during his campaign while presenting himself as an anti-war candidate. Then came more bombs, more wars, and more chaos, she writes, from the Let Them Eat Chaos in Chief. Didn't I call that quite a while back? He ignored the upcoming midterms and growing public opposition to foreign intervention while escalating the conflict with Iran. Tucker Carlson remarked that Trump appears weak, compromised, and ultimately willing to advance Israel's strategic objectives as the Middle East moves toward wider war. The fate of the Palestinians has never been more desperate. While politicians deliver performative speeches about the catastrophe in Gaza and international courts debate Netanyahu's future, the war continues. Trump appears almost gleeful about bombing Iran and dragging the U.S. deeper into yet another Middle East quagmire. Back in 2025, Tara Reid says, I wrote and spoke optimistically that perhaps Trump would finally end American endless wars. I could have not been more wrong. But I'm not so sure it was right or wrong thing here. As I discussed in referencing the writing of Constantine von Hafenmeister, his article, Why Donald Trump is a Mystical Figure of Historical Proportions, speaking through his book entitled Esoteric Trumpism, regarding Trump the archetype. Everything was lined up for Trump to be that guy, the guy he promised, the guy to restore the original establishment order. He was handed the once-in-many-lifetimes opportunity to be the hero to the American Republic and to the people he seemed to speak to. It was not wrong to believe he could and would pull that off. That was a very real opportunity. And yes, hopium being what it was not wrong to be optimistic that he would fulfill his campaign promises given his highly consistent campaign rhetoric, which only after the fact can be seen was duplicitous if saying he thought the campaign slogan Make America Great Again wasn't the best. Or for those who bought into the I can't believe it's not butter campaign, that wasn't a clue. But it's also why I don't agree that he can be characterized being a Trojan horse. I'm not intelligent enough in literature to know what he is best characterized. But fate handing Trump the opportunity that he subsequently fails to deliver, squanders for a few billions debt instruments, and apparently mostly because of himself, an archetypical battle provided to him, to allow him to overcome his own ego for principle and failing badly, does not sound to me being consistent with a Trojan horse characterization. This is something else. The devil speaking into his nicked ear, and he doesn't get out his fiddle, but starts fiddling without one. She goes on to write, instead, he has embraced and expanded Israel's strategic agenda with little regard for the consent of the American people. Now, an even more troubling convergence is taking shape. The U.S. and NATO proxy war with Russia through Ukraine is increasingly overlapping with the conflict involving Iran. Not only through military resources, but through political messaging and political rhetoric. The information war is waging as well. Influential figures such as Laura Loomer, some call it Larry, who reportedly has Trump's ear, the nicked ear it is, yes, continue to promote aggressively anti-Russian rhetoric and inflammatory calls that further escalates tension. And the common denominator between the Ukraine and Palestine and Iran is the Zionist political movement. Not the Jews, so-called. It's a genocidal political movement illegally and belligerently occupying Palestine and now Lebanon. Its sights are on Iran and anywhere else it can put its big boots, if America lets it. As summer comes to an end, the drums of a broader world war seem louder than ever. Meanwhile, the American dream continues to die. For Israel, however, a new strategic era is only beginning. And that'd be a strategic nicked era, wouldn't it? And we're getting another tale on what's going on in the global south, in the South America. And this bully, as Iran identifies him. And more information is coming out about how Trump works in the world and what the truth might be going on in the skullduggery of the of what happens and possibly CIA Mossad continuing on and on. U.S. punished Colombia's outgoing leader for calling Gaza war genocide. Right to speech, right? Yes, it doesn't exist, does it really? Maybe it does, though, doesn't it? Dr. Pierre Corey was saying, yeah, it works. Well, not for them, apparently. Not when you have someone like Trump running the show, or Mossad, or CIA. Washington's sanctions against Gustavo Petro and its worsening ties with Bogota had little to do with Donald Trump's war on drugs, Rosa Yolanda Villavicencio has told RT. In an exclusive interview aired on Sunday, Villavicencio insisted that the decisive factor behind the U.S. sanctions on Petro was not his alleged failure to combat drug trafficking, but rather his unspoken support for Palestine and repeated accusations that Israel was committing genocide in Gaza. Relations between Bogota and Washington, Colombia's largest trading partner, steadily deteriorated during Petro's presidency over U.S. policy in Latin America, particularly toward Venezuela and Cuba, regional anti-drug efforts, and broader geopolitical difference, most notably Petro's outspoken support for Palestine and the criticisms of Israel. This culminated in Washington sanctioning Petro last year, accusing him of, quote, allowing drug cartels to flourish, close quote, and, quote, refusing to stop, close quote, narcotics trafficking, if you remember the news just then. Exactly. Confirming what she's saying is the point. U.S. President Donald Trump called Petro an, quote, illegal drug leader, close quote. Sounds familiar, right, Maduro? An openly backed right-wing presidential candidate, Abelardo de la Estrella, who campaigned on restoring closer ties with Washington over Petro ally and left-wing Senator Ivan Cepeda in the election earlier this year. Sounds just like the modus operandi of the Maduro matter, calling Maduro the illegal drug leader. Exactly. For Israel's sake, remember? Sounds like the only cartel is the Zio U.S. criminal chaos cartel. And if the United States government will vilify and attack someone out there for saying the Zionist political movement is committing genocide, you think you might escape the same fate at home when you are identified and AI enhanced? And how would you know how hard you're being flocked? A couple more traffic tickets every few months? More notices of deficiency or to comply from the government, whether valid or not? A do-gooder complaint suspecting you did something? Audits? Having to go through secondary holds for further investigation? More hassles, obstructions, and lockouts when attempting to go about your digital life? A red flag on your accounts? An increase in your property taxes? Villavicencio rejected Washington's justification for sanctioning Petro, arguing that his administration had delivered record results in combating drug trafficking. Quote, we are talking about record-breaking seizures of cocaine, exceeding the figures achieved by any previous administration, close quote, she said, adding that authorities had dismantled cocaine laboratories extradited suspects, confiscated criminal assets, and kept the U.S. informed on those efforts. Unlike what the United States did, we heard last episode, it hasn't done anything. Operation Southern Straw has not stopped the flow of cocaine, for sure. Quote, President Petro's inclusion of the OFAC list is no way related to drug trafficking. These measures were taken against the president because of his firm and principled stance when he openly described what is happening in Palestine as genocide, DeVincenzo declared. Quote, that was the real reason, close quote. Petro severed diplomatic ties with Israel in 2024 over its military campaign in Gaza, repeatedly accusing West Jerusalem of committing genocide and becoming one of Israel's fiercest critics in Latin America. He also suspended all Israeli arms purchases, ending Colombia's long-standing reliance on Israeli military technology, banned coal exports to Israel, and later expelled Israel's remaining diplomats after an aid flotilla carrying Colombian activists was intercepted by Israeli forces. And if we remember those stories, they were all in international law as well. Colombia also formally joined the South African genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. Petro is due to hand power to President-elect De La Estrella on August 7th. He has said he will not attend the inauguration, challenged the legitimacy of the election, and alleged that Israel manipulated Colombia's presidential vote by hacking election servers. Oh, I thought that was Venezuela that was doing that. Apart from aligning Colombia more closely with Washington, De La Estrella has pledged to restore full diplomatic ties with Israel, effectively reversing nearly every major foreign policy decision of Petro administration. Meanwhile, the Gaza conflict remains unresolved despite recent political developments. Earlier this week, Hamas said it had accepted Trump's Board of Peace proposal for phased disarmament, provided Israel fulfills its commitments, including a phased military withdrawal, humanitarian access, and progress on reconstruction. And I understand money has been coming in fund to fund from the Board of Peace, a construction loan for a military base there. So peaceful. Israel has yet to formally endorse the proposal, however, insisting that any withdrawal can only begin after Hamas fully disarms, leaving the process deadlocked. Israeli forces have meanwhile continued operations across Gaza, with Palestinian officials reporting at least one person killed and seven others wounded in the strikes on Friday. So much for the ceasefire. And speaking about a bad moon rising, to the victor belongs the spoils, right? Trump brags about war on Venezuela. Not actually. Not to a common thief. That's not said for bandits or pirates. And a war was not declared nor authorized either. U.S. President Donald Trump openly described the U.S. war against Venezuela in the language of plunder. Quote, and we've paid for the war with what we've taken out many, many, many times, close quote, Trump said. In early January, the U.S. launched an illegal aggression against Venezuela, kidnapping President Nicolas Maduro and First Lady Celia Flores. Around 75 people were killed during the attack on Caracas, with the abduction of the president and first lady. So what Trump has established is not restoration of the American Republic, but that a band of robbers and thieves can unilaterally determine the property owner is a drug kingpin, raid the house, kill the dogs, abduct the owner, torture him in a cage indefinitely, and plunder his estate, all on trumped up charges. As I think on that, sounds like what the government do at home to Americans already. Oh, never mind. My bad. Go back to sleep. Carry on, pirate-in-chief, to the victor, indeed, in an occupied world run by organized criminal syndicates. Bit by bit, lower the expectations of what constitutes honesty, decency, and virtue in a world of crickets. Trump also says the ICC campaign aims to protect Netanyahu, not himself. Everything's about himself, isn't it? I just don't get this. But I don't get that personality type either. It's probably too big for me. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Friday that the United States campaign against the International Criminal Court is focused on protecting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and other officials from prosecution rather than shielding himself from any potential legal action. Like Trump is protecting all the other people in the Epstein files that harms children? Speaking during a cabinet meeting in Camp David, Trump addressed remarks made by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who said five countries had announced plans to withdraw from ICC since Washington launched its campaign against the court earlier this month. The administration argues that ICC threatens U.S. sovereignty and could improperly target American personnel. Well, what does Satan Yehu have to do with U.S. sovereignty? Quote, there's no information that they're after me, close quote, Trump said. Quote, it could happen, but he's not trying to defend me. He's trying to defend Bibi and various other people, close quote. Defend Bibi? Sounds more like a protection racket. Trump added that at present, there is no indication the ICC is pursuing a case against him. It's on and on about this guy. And yes, we haven't heard anything, so why would he even be talking about it? But here we have, the United States is protecting Bibi. We're attacking an international court that we don't even sign up to. We denounce attacking their existence to protect somebody else. Who's going to be integrated into the U.S. military? And get lots of money administratively then. Doesn't have to be a welfare queen. We can be in partnership now. Yoking with evil. Forced to choose, top general warns Pentagon can either defend homeland or Israel. A breath of fresh air, it seems to me right here. The Iran war, which has been an on and off for the last 4 months, appears to have taken a heavy toll on the U.S. stretching its military resources so thin that it is struggling to protect even its closest ally, Israel. According to the exclusive report by the Washington Post published on Saturday, August 1st, a top U.S. general informed the Pentagon that the military is now finding it difficult to protect Israel from incoming ballistic missiles amid the ongoing Iran war. The general seeks extra destroyers to keep Israel protected. General Alexis Grinkiewicz, the head of U.S. European Command, sent a written warning to the leaders at Pentagon saying that without another naval destroyer, he will be forced to choose defense of the United States homeland over that of Israel, according to officials speaking on the condition of anonymity. The fast pace of the Iran war has led to a growing maintenance issues, making it harder for Grinkiewicz to have enough ships available. The report withheld specific details about the destroyer's availability at the request of military officials who cited security concerns. U.S. bolsters attacks blockade after temporary MOU collapses. Well, it was never puffed up. It was never used. It was planned to fail. The U.S. Navy has sent destroyers and aircraft carriers near Iran to bolster the measures keeping Iranian ships blocked after a fragile ceasefire brokered in early April gave way to a temporary memorandum of understanding for a permanent truce, which has since crumbled. There are reportedly 11 destroyers deployed near Iran and 2 aircraft carriers. Another destroyer has been deployed to the Red Sea, where the Houthis in Yemen are attempting their own blockade. To protect Israel, the general said. The latest round of hostilities between the U.S. and Iran intensified in early July, killing 3 American servicemen in 2 separate attacks on U.S. bases in the Middle East. And I told you before, there's lots of on-the-ground reports that this number of killed soldiers is a lot higher, and I just got another one. It's a lot higher. So we'll have to wait and see. One of the key global maritime trade passages, the Strait of Hormuz, which holds at least 20% of the global oil supply before the war began, has seen a sharp decline in shipping traffic as the war escalates. Wasn't supposed to be a war, remember? It's all to protect or aid Israel in its greater Zionist project on your dime or two. And just a couple of dimes worth here, like all things that go Trump in the night, Apple got $2.2 billion in tariff refund this quarter. Tim Cook hosted his final quarterly earnings call as Apple CEO Thursday evening, and it ended on a positive note. Apple beat Wall Street analyst revenue estimates, but it appears to have been done so via a one-time windfall, an estimated $2.19 billion Bravo dollars in tariff refunds. The $2.19 billion figure is an estimate based on the company's reported total revenue of $109.4 billion Bravo dollars. April's stock dropped following its revenue report. The one-time tariff rebate artificially inflated the company's gross margin. Without it, the company failed to beat analyst expectation. President Trump's aggressively pursued global tariffs after he returned to the White House, resulting in a shock to the global economic system and a wave of price increases on consumer tech products. He said also it wasn't supposed to happen that way, but it done. However, in February, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Trump's administration lacked the authority to unilaterally impose tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977, striking down Trump's signature economic policy. As a result, many companies like Apple became eligible for refunds for the tariff fees levied against them. Those billionaire boys rebates, so the consumer is conned again, left holding the bag, receiving nothing, though paying the increased prices, which Trump also said weren't going to be paid for by the consumer. The working stiffs stiffed again. And moving into where the world with the future that they want relative to our Siberian gulag, Putin signs a law legalizing use of cryptocurrencies in Russia. So tie again what I said earlier about the standard that Russia is trying to promote now relative to sustainable development, and look at what they're doing here in the cryptocurrency sphere. They're already moving. They're already making it work. As I said that they would. They'd be moving faster than the United States. Russia President Vladimir Putin signed a law establishing legal basis for the legal circulation of cryptocurrencies in Russia, according to a document published on the Legal Acts portal on Tuesday. The document recognizes digital currency as property, introduces general requirements for its circulation, and empowers the Bank of Russia to allow, regulate, and supervise the organizers of its circulation. Allow or not. Regulate circulation or program its value to force you to use it if it's not gone from the third-party controlled wallet. I ask you to check what's in your wallet. And you say, well, let me ask the agent of the government. Is warm and fuzzy, so comfortable, so convenient, so wow, right, Dojo 4? Oh, and I appreciate your service aviating the high-flying BTW Blogcaster content all these years. Just go to the Blogcaster, folks. Click on the bell. He'll look right at you. Got a portrait of him right there. The Doge of War. At the same time, Russians will have the opportunity to legally invest in cryptocurrency on licensed Russian platforms and use the service of brokers and management companies when conducting operations with it. Invest, like in investment, not like in money. It's apparently not legal to use private crypto, because the Russian people are presumed to have criminal intent too, just like Americans. The purpose of the introduced regulation is to create a legal framework for the crypto market so that it is as comfortable as possible for bona fide participants, meaning you're not presumed having a bona fide intention outside of legalization, and the act guarantees the protection of their rights. Rights in a licensed system is obligations and duties, now as a property that owns you. And at the same time, makes it possible to stop criminal transactions. Chairman of the Russian State Duma Committee on Financial Market, Anatoly Asakov, explained, tracked it is, traced it is, and taxed, AI enhanced, 24/7. Oh, the days when Bitcoin was anonymous Wild West, people thought. Soon to be a Trump-invested third-party stablecoin near you. And there's more information detailing how this crypto system for the privileged players is to work. Putin legalizes crypto in Russia. What you need to know. And I think this will be pretty universal as it works over through the global system, right? It's going to be all harmonized. Anyway, very close. The president has authorized a regulated digital currency market while keeping a ban on domestic payments. So international players get preferential cyber gulag treatment as Siberian gulag trustees, while the normal Russian inmate schmo gets nothing. Just like in America, Wall Street over man industry. Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed a landmark law, legalizing cryptocurrency trading, which will be regulated as part of the country's financial system. The law on digital currencies and digital rights, signed and published on Tuesday, formalizes a already booming market. According to blockchain analytics firm Chainalysis, Russia ranks as Europe's second crypto market by transaction volume, according to the latest available data, while the financial ministry estimates this domestic crypto trading totals around 50 billion Bravo rubles, roughly 650 million Mike dollars per day. The legislation is part of the government's broader effort to bring crypto activity out of the shadow economy while facilitating cross-border trade after Ukraine-related sanctions severely restricted Russia's access to the West dollar and euro-based financial system. Here are the practical implications of the legislation. What has changed under the law? Until now, Russians could legally own cryptocurrencies, but trading largely took place on foreign platforms or through services operated outside of Russia's regulatory framework. The new law creates the country's first regulated cryptocurrency market. From September 1st of 2026, Russians will be able to buy and sell approved cryptocurrencies through licensed platforms supervised by the central bank. Sound familiar to anyone yet? Anyone? New digital repositories will keep records of who owns crypto assets, similar to the way traditional financial assets are recorded. Similar, but modernized, right? AI-enhanced tracking, tracing, taxing to the benefit of the government, and to the benefit of any regime wanting to retaliate against anyone it chooses for any reason in charge of that error-prone and AI-enhanced modernized oppression. At the same time, some things will remain unchanged. Cryptocurrencies are still not legal tender in Russia, meaning they cannot be used to pay for goods and services inside the country. That's right, because that is how incremental societal transformation and acceptance of the binding chains occur. Besides, we're still working the bugs out of the system, which is not quite big enough yet to handle the surveillance system, and it's easier to coerce a few entities with something to lose than a lot of schmucks that have nothing much more than surviving and like it. Who can buy cryptocurrencies under the new law? Both ordinary Russians and investment professionals will be able to buy cryptocurrencies, although investors will face stricter rules. Retail investors will first have to pass a basic knowledge test and will be limited to buying up to 300,000 rubles, about $3,800 worth of crypto per year through each platform. Sounds like a driver test at the DMV, don't it? Yeah, and there's a reason for that. It's for the business class, isn't it? Are qualified investors will also have to pass the test, but will not face investment limits. Which cryptocurrencies are approved? At first, only the world's largest and most actively traded cryptocurrencies will be available on Russia's regulated market. To qualify automatically, a cryptocurrency must have an average market capitalization of more than 5 trillion tango rubles, about 64 billion Bravo dollars, an average daily trading volumes above 1 trillion tango rubles, about 12.8 billion Bravo dollars, over the previous 2 years. Now that our brains are glazed over by the numbers, don't miss the next shot across the bow of a free, decentralized, anonymous system. According to Central Bank First Deputy Governor Vladimir Kistyukin, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the USDT stablecoin currently meet those requirements. Boom! Bitcoin, Ether, and USDT stablecoin meet the track, trace, and tax criteria. and for international integration into the global financial system. Who'd have thunk it? Does USDT mean U.S. Donald Trump stablecoin? I think we read in a prior episode that it does. That is, the USD1 stablecoin, backed by the Trump family's World Liberty Financial, positioned as a dollar-pegged digital currency designed to compete with Tether's USDC and Circle's U.S. Not Circle's over in Europe, but it used to be a host on RLM. Circle's USDC in a global stablecoin market. Can the official familial corruption fill the swamp any quicker at the expense of the American people and the world? Building and profiting off the foreign digital panopticon Trump is ushering in to enslave America? The central bank will be able to approve additional cryptocurrencies in the future if they meet the criteria. Yeah, the central bank will allow and regulate the use, which includes programming or prohibiting use. Where? And it's gone. What about crypto mining? Crypto mining is already legal in Russia, but it's subject to strict rules. Industrial miners must register with authorities, report the cryptocurrency they produce, and pay taxes on their earnings. Individuals can still mine crypto at home without registering, provided their electricity use stays below government limits. Mining is also restricted in parts of the country where electricity supplies are under strain. The government has banned or seasonally limited mining in several regions until a recent 2031 to prevent power shortages. The new legislation leaves the existing mining framework largely unchanged. What does the new law mean for Russia foreign trade? While cryptocurrencies remain banned for everyday payments in Russia, businesses can continue using them for cross-border settlements. That's a twist, ain't it? What's not good for we is good for thee. Exporters and importers may settle transactions directly using crypto wallets or through licensed intermediaries. The move is intended to give Russian businesses more options for paying foreign partners at a time when Western sanctions have disrupted access to parts of the traditional international financial system. Since 2022, many Russian banks have been cut off from SWIFT, SWIFT, and faced restrictions on transactions in dollars and euros, prompting Moscow to look for alternative payment channels, setting up the excuse to set up the global digital panopticon, heavy on the con, man, right, Trump? The setup for the takedown. Russia has increasingly settled transaction in rubles and the national currencies of its trading partners, such as the Chinese yuan and the Indian rupee. The crypto law also follows EU sanctions packages targeting Russia's digital currency market. In April, the EU's 20th sanction package banned transactions involving the RUBX stablecoin and the planned digital ruble, citing concerns that they would be used to circumvent sanctions. It's a criminal act, right? And this is supposed to trap criminals, too? Catch them? Last month, the 21st package expanded crypto-related restrictions by banning transactions with additional crypto platforms and service provider. As a sovereign, arguably, the EU can ban a crypto within the jurisdiction, but the Russian law is not banned from integration with the existing global financial system, and why the Russian law deals with the international intercourse while denying domestic use. The ban also covers the excuse for Russia on adopting American standard USDT stablecoins, which, like the USD1 Trump family coin, which is designed to be pegged to the US dollar and is backed by US treasuries and other cash equivalents, integrates the Russian into the digital global financial system secretly in your face while claiming to be banned from it. The external international payment system and the internal domestic system are different and work separately. The global financial system has been secured first. Those inmates in the Siberian Gulag will be secured as normal prisoners or as indebted serfs or slaves, remember? Even after, and it's gone. And you'll like it, or else. This has been BTWRLM 680, and I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs or Nature Willing.